Hi, good afternoon. I know you're not used to seeing me up here, but Representative Wilson is flat on her back, and Representative Isaacson is on a trip to Fairbanks on another issue. So I will be chairing the meeting here today. Let the time show. It's 13:05, and the House Transportation Committee is coming to order. Present Representative Lynn, Representative Johnson, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Christ Tompkins. I'm Representative Feige. Let's see. Before we get going, please make sure your cell phones are off. I'll do that too. My intention here today, first we will hear House Bill 19 from Representative Stoltz, and then after that we'll hear House Bill 15. My intention with 15 is to see what the will of the committee is. With House Bill 19, we'll hear it and set it aside for the time being. Those are Representative Wilson's wishes. So, without further ado, Darrell, are you going to present? Or Bill?
Chair, I'll open up at the meeting.
Okay. And we understand you have a Finance Committee meeting to go to?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Feige and members of the committee, for the opportunity to have the first hearing on Health Bill 19. And I'm a firm believer in process. Last year when there were questions, the bill was in finance, and I asked it to be sent back so we'd have further hearings. When there's a serious issue, I like a lot of deliberation, especially one that has such a direct connection to so many of our constituents as vehicle registration and trailer registration. And the bill is one that's not a new bill in the process. It's been heard by this committee and our House in the past, and it's back again. Good things don't stay buried forever. It's one, probably the issue I'm most confronted on of legislation. It's the idea of, one is the convenience of being able to register a trailer one time. Those of us that have recreational equipment know it's gets to be a real hassle trying to remember to change it. We rely a lot on the honesty of our constituents. It's very easy to just change a trailer license plate to one another. There's really not real vivid descriptions of what a trailer is, and I think this having the ability to only do it one time. People that I deal with, I can't speak to everybody else's constituencies. They don't like to deal with government on a regular basis. The less they do, the better, and sometimes they'll even pay a premium to do it, to not do it. Excuse me. That's the concept on the trailers. It's a matter of convenience. I think you get better compliance, and it's also an equity issue. Commercial trailers have a very favorable tax treatment compared to recreational trailers. The issue of the vehicle registrations, similar concept. After a vehicle is a certain age, and there's an arbitrariness of the age we picked. For some of us, 8 or 10 years old might still be a new vehicle. And some parts of the country, like where I live, you've probably got a couple hundred thousand miles on that vehicle at way before 10 years. And you and I are in similar circumstances on that. So those are all issues the committee can say that's the right date. There was an arbitrariness to it, and that was a subjectivity. The concept was after a vehicle is a certain age and you've fallen in love with that truck, you're never going to sell. I think you should have the option of registering it, not having to deal with it. This became possible when an issue the number of us worked on was getting rid of the IM program. That took a major obstacle out of the way, and that's the emissions test that was still active in the municipality of Anchorage, and also affected the MATSU because of the enforcement issues of MATSU commuters. So that, getting rid of that, thank you, Mayor Sullivan, thank you, Commissioner Hardig, and thank you, the members of the House that supported that effort. that. We wouldn't be able to deal with this very effectively without that. There are some fiscal issues, and there's, I think there's a subjectivity in how they'll affect it. The two-year licensing, which there was a lot of squawking on. Then the then Commissioner of Administration, Mr. Boyer, said, finally figured out, wow, we're going to make a lot of money on this. Two-year registration, turnover in Alaska. We like this idea. And that it was really tied into the Anchorage IM if you didn't have to register it. That turned into a revenue maker for the Department of Administration. And that goes back, you know, about 15, 16 years under the Knowles administration. So, the fiscal notes, there is some subjectivity. The fact that they just corrected an assumption today in a revised fiscal note on revenues. So those are all things that I think it's appropriate, not just for the Finance Committee, for this committee to look at the fiscal issues on when you're dealing with the policy. So, but I would keep a skeptical eye on all the assumptions of a bureaucracy who is pretty dependent on revenues. And I think it's going to boil down to, and if there is a loss of revenues, I think you're all capable of making a value judgment on something that's not connected with the cost of the registration, whether the money belongs in government's pocket or your constituents' pocket. And it's not a finance issue. That's a common sense issue that any member, it could be made in CNRA, transportation, labor and commerce, anywhere. So that's the, it has a, it's an optional program as we've outlined it. The individual has an option of whether they want to apply for the permanent registration. And it also has a local option provision. If a community wants to collect revenues on their own or even collect higher revenues and have that interface and engage discussion with their local taxpayers, I think that's the appropriate place to have it. That has a local option provision there for local governments. So, if I've left anything out, it's unintentional. That's the crux of it. I understand that's not necessarily relevant here, but I've been pretty busy. I understand talk radio in South Central is pretty lit up on this issue, and it's not because I've been promoting it. It's something I had thought about, and it's when you hear enough from people spontaneously bringing up a common sense issue, you're not being a representative if you're not at least looking at it. So with that, I certainly entertain any questions.
Questions from the committee?
I don't have any questions, but I have a couple comments. First of all, just for full disclosure, I do have two vehicles that I've counted that would fall under this category of being older than 8 years, and I'm still driving them. One's parked right out back here. That being said, certainly I have had a lot of calls and emails from my constituents reminding me that they too have older vehicles, and they'd really like me to pass this forward. In regards to the trailer aspect, as a commercial standpoint, I have commercial trailers that we only register once. Same term, I got snow machine trailers that I do pay the tab, and I'm not sure exactly where the licenses are. I put them in my vehicle, and it's hard to trade them off. But so, you know, that constant upkeep, I do pay them. I can guarantee you that I don't always get the trailer tags on in a timely basis. So that being said, again, many of my constituents have that same issue. So I did want to make that comment.
Mr. Chair, can I make a disclosure as well? I have a 1999 Ford Ranger with 173,000 miles on it. That's over the 8 mile. I do have a boat trailer, which I have not had a chance to use because of lack of opportunities in the Upper Sioux City and drainages this past year after I bought it. So those two disclosures, I don't think I'm any more conflicted than the rest of my frustrated constituents and neighbors.
I guess the question for members of the committee, does anybody own a vehicle less than 8 years old?
Well,
seeing none.
Barely.
I just want to say, me too, being a fiscal conservative, both of my personal vehicles are more than 8 years old, and I do have a vacation trailer more than 2 years old. which I've used on occasion for special session.
Well, and I think Representative Schultz brings out a good point, is, and you do as well, Representative Gaddis, is the, we all have busy lives, all of our constituents have busy lives, and to have to keep going back every other year or so to consistently re-register something, there's really not a whole lot of money involved for DMV. It's just the time and effort of having to go back to do something, like, why not just register it once and be done with it? So it's certainly a legitimate point. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, do we have someone from DMV on the line?
You can have, that's part of the rest of your presentation.
But I just want to make sure that I could ask the sponsor.
Representative Lynn?
I believe I pay less because if you look at me closely, I happen to be a senior. And so would there be any difference in the registration fee for a senior who has vehicles 8 years or older?
Mr. Chair, I won't delve into something. I think you're allowed one non-commercial personal exemption if you become of a certain age, which we all hope to do. But that's, I don't want to delve any further than that. I'm sure the DMV folks can answer that.
And we do have somebody, if you'd like to pursue that.
Okay.
Gentlemen.
Well, after DMV comes on.
Okay. Representative Christ Hopkins.
I'm reading the letter that came from the Alaska Municipal League, and Kathy Wasserman writes that there were revisions and work done on the bill in the last legislature that prompted AML to take no position on the bill. I was just wondering what those revisions or what sections in the bill were the result of that collaboration.
Mr. Co-Chair, it was a very well-defined local option. Mm-hmm. I think they may still have some concerns, but I haven't had a lot of interface with them this year.
Okay. Yeah, perhaps ask that when they come up in the public testimony.
Sure.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Stoll.
Appreciate your work. Can Mr. Breeze hang here and respond to anything? In my behalf?
Certainly.
No, thank you. Thank
Mr.
you,
Chairman. Mr. I want my carrots.
You want me to send some down? I have for the
last time. Last time before I was on a committee, he brought carrots.
I have delivered 75 pounds of Valley carrots, with many more to come for the session. They are a healthy alternative, and it's always good to support Valley Enterprises.
I'm sorry, I'm in a public. Not that you'd advertise.
If this was Rotary, I'd be paying so many fines. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Darrell Reese, staff representative Bill Stoltz. In response to Representative Price Tompkins' question, the concern that AML had last year was adopting the permanent vehicle registration meant that municipalities won't be able to collect motor vehicle registration tax at the time of registration. That's what statute allows. The new version of the bill and the change that we made last year and exists in this year's version allows municipalities to set a motor vehicle registration tax for vehicles that are registered permanently. That didn't exist last year, so if they figure say the rate's $100 now for a regular vehicle, if they figure we need to get $200 to cover this for the life of the vehicle, we put that option in, which allows cities and municipalities that have motor vehicle registration taxes to pass an ordinance. Basically says we need to get this much for a vehicle that's registered permanently. The options available for both motor vehicles and for trailers.
Any other questions from the committee? Do you have anything further on the presentation?
If you would like, I can go through some kind of details of what the bill, sections of the bill are, if you would like, but it seems like everyone has a good understanding. But
let's go ahead and go through the bill.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz already summarized what the bill does. I can take you through kind of by sections and highlight what the bill actually does. Section 2 of the bill allows vehicles that are 8 years old or older, at the discretion of the owner, if the owner wants to choose to obtain a permanent registration, they can choose to do that. If they want to keep the 2-year registration because they plan on selling the vehicle after a couple years, that option is there. It also spells out the fee for the registration for vehicles that are 2 years old or older. If you're doing the permanent registration option, you still have to pay the DMV fee for registering your vehicle. And that's based on the age and of the vehicle and other factors that are played in there. But it also charges, it requires the payment of a $25 permanent registration fee. I think to accomplish this, DMV would probably have to create a box on the vehicle registration form. Do you want permanent registration? You check that. And then they would simply make the option available and DMV would then have to provide either a plate or a tab, a sticker, where they provide the year sticker for expiration. It would probably just be a tab, something that states that you have permanent registration. Section 3 kind of goes back and answers the question that was raised by Representative Lynn related to seniors. Currently, seniors are allowed one exemption where they get free registration. That is all that this will allow. Permanent registration is not extended to the seniors for the free registration they have. They still have to reapply each year. If they want the permanent registration, they'll have to pay the $25. I'm guessing that DMV could probably set up, if you're getting the free registration, you pay the $25. You could get the permanent registration at that point for seniors. That would be something that would have to be set up within DMV, and it is allowed under Section 3. We had to put Section 3 in there to spell out that the exemption for registration is separate for seniors, so there's an understanding that they get the free registration, but if they want the permanent fee, it's going to be a separate charge on top of that. If they want to spend the $25, or if I were a senior, I would just get the free registration each year and keep the $25 in my pocket. But that would mean I'd have to go back to DMV every 2 years or renew my registration every 2 years. So it's a judgment call for the individual owner to decide if they want to do that at that stage.
I would think if you're 65 years old, you should be able to make that judgment one way or the other.
I should have the wisdom to do so.
Mm-hmm. No comment.
I was going to object, Bob.
Section 4 is kind of a repeat of Section 2, but it's just dealing with trailers. Permit registration is only available for non-commercial trailers under this bill. Commercial trailers already have the option. It was passed, I believe, back in 1998, where they can register for $20. And this bill is just kind of providing some equity for the owners of non-commercial trailers, recreational trailer owners. Representative Stoltz mentioned boats, snow machines, horse trailers. There's several other, trailers that people have for recreational and non-commercial purposes. And this allows them, again, paying the regular registration fee, which is currently $30, plus a $25 fee to get the permanent registration tab. And that's a judgment call. Again, am I going to own this trailer for long enough where this $25 makes sense, or do I plan on selling it in a year or two? And make the judgment if you want. The two-year option for regular registration is still allowed under Section 4. Section 5 of the bill, Representative Stoltz mentioned that this is only possible because Anchorage did away with EIM. This section was left in just in case someone brings an IM back. Taking it out and removing it would have meant if an IM came back, then some of them would have to come back in state statute and plug this back in so the Department of Environmental Conservation could get the fees they need for monitoring, doing the monitoring that's necessary for locations that do have an IM. Not really necessary to the bill, but it's just kept in place just because it allows for municipalities to do this without the state having to come back and the legislature come back and correct and plug this back in as needed in the future. Section 6 spells out the base rate for motor vehicle registration taxes, and it includes an addition on page 4, line 9, which makes a reference to the option that's coming up later in the bill that allows vehicles to get our owners of vehicles to have a permanent vehicle registration tax that they pay, and municipalities to set that. Municipalities have the ability to set the motor vehicle registration tax as they would like if they want to. Not all cities and municipalities in the state do so. I believe there's 16 in the state that have motor vehicle registration tax, and I think I included in your packet a listing of those states that have motor vehicle registration taxes and what they are for trailers and motor vehicles, where they differ from the base rate if the municipalities choose to set one. Some of them match the base rate and some of them set their own. The collection of the motor vehicle registration tax and establishing and setting the rate for motor vehicle tax, if it's greater than what's set in the base right here, is done by the municipality. It's a municipal tax. It's not a state tax. Currently, DMV collects the tax at the time of registration. And for doing so, they have a memorandum of understanding with the various communities, and they get about 8% I believe, is the total they get for the revenue collected from the motor vehicle registration tax, with the rest going back to the municipality.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gaddis.
Quick question. You know, you've referred a couple of times that you can make the choice depending whether you're going to sell the vehicle. Is it safe to say that this permanent tag does not transfer when you sell? We start all over again.
Yeah, no. Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, no, the permanent registration does not transfer. It's like any other vehicle registration. When you sell a vehicle, you have to submit the tab off the bottom of the title to DMV. And we're expecting all Alaskans to be honest and law-abiding and do that when they sell their vehicles. And that would be a notification to DMV that if someone had a permit registration, the vehicle was sold and transferred ownership. Permit registration expires at that point.
Thank you.
And someone would then have the, I believe it's 60 days to complete the registration at that point, to put the vehicle in their name and title as required by law. It's not transferable.
Thank you.
Okay. Please continue.
Section 7, the last line of Section 7's line on page 4, lines 22 and 23 is important. Only one registration tax may be collected. This becomes an important issue later in the bill, Section 8, when we get there, and 9, establish the fact that the state, Section 8 and 9 establish the fact that the state cannot collect or DMV, through the state's agent, cannot collect more than $100 motor vehicle registration tax fee for vehicles that have permanent registration. And that applies to both motor vehicles and trailers. If the tax is greater than that, that's set by a municipality. From Osceola, I am from Osceola, let's say the Mattsu Borough sets a tax at $300. And in setting that tax, based on what HB 19 has here, and the maximum that's allowed to be collected by DMV, the Mattsu Borough is then assuming the fact that they have the responsibility to collect that tax, because the tax, there can only be one tax collected. So if DMV collects $100, that's the only tax that people can be required to pay. So if the tax rate, the motor vehicle registration tax rate, is set above $100, the city municipality has the responsibility to collect their own tax.
So, thank you.
Section 8 of the bill highlights the fact that municipalities are given the authority to set a permanent vehicle registration tax, motor vehicle registration tax, as they see fit, as they deem as necessary. And we recognized through working and talking with AML last year when we included this, that it can be a burden to some municipalities because several of them use the money for, and they specify the money for certain things, and we didn't want to have an impact on them when the vehicle doesn't come back to be registered in 2 years. So we gave them the option to set a permanent vehicle registration tax rate at an amount that they feel is necessary, and go through the public process through city ordinance to pass the proper things, and people can have input in the community if they think the tax is too burdensome or not. We shift the burden to them, to the city, to set the rate for motor vehicle registration tax. Section 9 basically establishes the fact that the Department of Motor Vehicles in the state cannot collect than $100, as I mentioned, collect more than $100, as I mentioned earlier. It's important to note that this $100 is not a cap. Section 8 allows the municipalities to set the motor vehicle registration tax rate at whatever number they feel is responsible. If the rate they set is more than $100, it will be up to the city, municipality, or borough to collect that tax. We're not trying to cap the maximum tax allowed. We're just saying if you want to collect more than $100 on vehicles registered permanently, it only affects vehicles registered permanently, is important to know, we won't collect the tax for you anymore. It's up to you to collect the tax beyond the $100.
Representative Christoff.
What is the intent of Section 9?
Well, the intent of Section 9 is trying to keep taxes low. It does give the municipalities have responsibility for the tax, and it also addresses the fact that there is some confusion among people whether or not the tax that's paid when you register your car is a state tax. Some of the things we heard as we were putting the bill together and talking with people is, well, why do we have to pay such high taxes? It's not a tax that you're paying to the state. It's a tax you're paying to the municipality that you live in. And the goal is you know, ideally we'd like, you know, the boss would like to see taxes kept low, if possible. If taxes are raised, we want people to be aware that it's a municipal tax and not a state tax that's being collected.
Go ahead.
How many municipalities have vehicle registration taxes greater than $100?
Let me pull out the form here.
Or which municipalities, I guess you should ask, if any.
Yeah, there should be a list, a page in your packet that lists more vehicle registration taxes. The important thing to note is if you, the, you're looking at vehicles that are 8 years or older. The motor vehicle registration tax is based on the age of the vehicle. Once the vehicle turns 8 years old, the tax rate flattens out and can, it is unchanged. So currently, if you look at vehicles eligible, which would be the non-commercial vehicles, flipping through the list here, see if I see any that are above $100 at this point. I think Unalaska might be the only one that is, and it's $116. Yeah, Unalaska and Dutch Harbor are the only municipalities in, that I have on the list here from the in-state of Alaska that have motor vehicle registration tax that is above $100, and they charge $116.
And just to clarify, this is the motor vehicle registration tax, not the property tax.
Not a property tax.
Which is a separate component.
Yes. We're just dealing with the registration issue.
Your registration. Okay.
So you have the effective date is the last section of the bill, I guess, is the only other.
Any other questions on House Bill 19? Representative Kristoff.
Yeah, in the sponsor letter, the penultimate paragraph is permit registration will result in a cost savings for Alaskans. That meaning it's going to basically translates to tax relief for vehicle owners and not necessarily cost savings for the state of Alaska. I'm just trying to clarify.
I could address it. You'd have to speak with Amy Erickson, the director for DMV, as far as the cost savings for the state of Alaska and what they would what possibly could be saved through fewer registration vehicle registrations taking place. I think that's going to be minimal. I believe most of the registrations are done through contract agencies or done online. So there really isn't a lot, won't be a lot of cost savings to the state that way. The cost savings to an Alaskan, if you have a vehicle that qualifies and is eligible, you register it. You pay the normal registration fee, the $25 fee. 2 years down the road, you don't have to go back to DMV and pay the regular registration fee anymore. So you'll as you continue to own the vehicle when it gets older, you'll realize the cost savings every 2 years from not having to re-register the vehicle.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? All right. At this time, we'll go ahead and open up public testimony on the bill, and unless you've got anything else. No. I'm showing right now just one person, Kathy Wasserman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kathy Wasserman, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. This year again, for right now, the League has taken a neutral stand on this bill. We are waiting for input from DMV on the financial impacts on each of the 16 municipalities. I would say most of those municipalities use that money for road maintenance and also for junk car removal. So how it impacts them will, of course, be the call on how they elect or tell me to take a stand on this bill. But for now, we are neutral.
Okay. Any other questions for Mrs. Wasserman? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 19? Anybody online? The 19 or 15? Okay. We do have Amy Erickson from DMV online for a question. I show her as for House Bill 15, but does anybody have any questions for DMV? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amy, I'm curious, how would you handle, is there going to be a special tag for the permanent license plates? It would be a special license plate. How do you envision that coming about to keep police officers and people writing tickets downtown from writing expired tags? So how do you envision that being identified as a lifetime or a permanently registered vehicle?
For the record, this is Amy Erickson, Director of Department or Division of Motor Vehicles. Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, we do anticipate, if there is a permanent registration for vehicles, to have an orange tag that would distinguish from other tags.
Point of clarification, Mr. Chairman. Are you talking about a tag on the plate or a special plate?
Yes, sir. Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, we would expect a tag on the plate, no special tab on the plate, not a special plate.
Okay. I've got a few. Thank you. Different question. How much in the black does DMV run? How much profit?
Our revenues are approximately $70 million a year.
And how much of that is as opposed to your cost? What's your profit?
Representative Johnson, we use about 17, our budget is about $17 million.
So what you're in there,
yeah. Wow. I'm sorry, did you say you generated $70 million?
Yes, sir.
And your costs are 17?
That's true. Yes, Mr. Representative Johnson.
Okie dokie. I guess my next question is, how many people renew their tags online versus in person?
Representative Johnson, we do about 11% in-house. The rest are done online.
What portion of your personnel are devoted to online versus in person?
None, sir.
No, there has that you must have misunderstood the question. There are certain people dedicated to in-person renewals and a certain number of staff dedicated to online renewals, and what's the proportion of those people?
Representative Johnson, we don't dedicate staff to online, specifically to online transactions. Or in person either.
So the person I go, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, so the person I go to behind the counter at DMV on Benson is also going in the back room and doing online stuff?
Representative Johnson, our staff rotates. They do each of the, they do everything, they just rotate.
Okay. I think that's it for now, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from committee for Ms. Erickson?
I'm sorry, one more that I forgot. Is there anything keeping the municipality of Anchorage for saying it's a $1,000 tax and preventing anyone from doing the permanent registration?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't see that there's anything prohibiting them from doing that.
And, Mr. Chairman, this may, for the sponsors, may be putting a cap on what the municipalities can charge on taxes, because I could see a way of no one ever using this if the municipality just went in and said it's $20,000 to register permanently tax, and so you'll never get anybody doing it. So I could circumvent this system very easily. So if the sponsor is here, we might want to look at that. And I don't want to put any ideas in any municipal's minds, but it would be very easy to keep this from ever everyone ever using this. Mr. Chairman.
On the other hand, Representative Johnson, they would do so at their own political peril.
Mm-hmm. No one would ever use it. No one would ever have to pay the tax.
Mm-hmm. They're a city.
They are a city. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's it.
All right. Is there anybody else online? And no one else in the room? At this point, I will not close public testimony per Representative Wilson's desires. But we will move on to House Bill 15, and sponsor Representative Keller is here.
Can we have an Eddie's, Mr. Chairman, for
brief Eddie's? Order. Representative Keller, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair Feige, and thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. For the record, my name is Wes Keller. I'm Representative of District 7. I guess it's appropriate to say happy birthday to Representative Christ Tompkins, too. You know, it's his birthday today, and I figured it.
Okay.
Don't know that. That ought to be on the record here, too. Right? It was all on the record once already.
For the record, there will be no singing in
this. You're a wise man, Mr. Chairman.
I've heard you sing, Representative Johnson.
Before I got this job of being a legislator, I was a small building contractor. And so business issues are important to me, and I believe this is a pro-business bill. And besides that, not only do I like to do something for business, but I like trucks in general, as I'm sure many of you do. So I don't want to make you jealous here, but what I've got is a bill that I like, and I don't like all of them saying. And NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses, they like the bill. The Alaska Trucking Association likes the bill. Department of Transportation likes the bill. DMV, doesn't break any federal laws that I'm been aware of, and ACLU hasn't complained. It's one of those just super bills, you know, and it's been vetted through the whole process. Of course, that can always change at a hearing, and that's why we look at it close, but it did go through almost all the way through both houses last year. So anyway, it's a good bill, and I what it does, it's a pro-business bill, but it just makes it a little bit easier. It doesn't make maybe as big a benefits for business as I would like, but it just reduces some of the regulations that are related to a certain category of trucks. And what we're talking about mostly is your one-ton trucks, your 35 series, 350 series, 3500 series, and small step vans. And it just allows them to not be defined in our statute as commercial vehicles. Right now, their category is commercial vehicles. So it changes the GVWR restriction there from 10,000 to 14,000 pounds, and this has application for a number of people. I know Representative Gaddis knows a campaign headquarters that I drive around, that's a one-ton truck, but I don't have a vested interest in this particular bill. Doesn't do me a lot of good, but that's the category of truck that we're talking about here. So with that, I would like my staff to, if it's okay with you, to go over the specifics of what the sections of the bill do, and I'll stay right here for questions that you might have.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Keller? All right, Mr. Pound, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Pound, staff to Representative Keller. House Bill 15, essentially, as the representative says, is designed to move our statutes into the modern day. When the statute was originally written, which was 1999, and one-ton pickup trucks were considerably lighter, as were all pickup trucks for that matter. Today, if they had seen what we were driving around as one-tons today in 1999, they would have probably been shocked. But and what we're trying to do is bring our statutes up to meet the requirements. By eliminating, or by changing the weight, we change the makeup of what a commercial vehicle is. With a commercial vehicle, there are requirements of the driver. There's insurance requirements that are different. They're much more expensive for the vehicle. Also, there's medical requirements, annual exams for the drivers as part of the CDL program. This allows drivers to operate in one area in particular is in pilot vehicles. And as I believe you have an email from Roger Boylan of NORCOM saying that this will actually help improve roads because a one-ton dually does not put as much weight on the road and cause as much damage as a single rear axle or single rear tired vehicle does. As far as the bill is concerned, we've broken it down into two sections dealing with federal statutes and definitions of commercial vehicles. The first section here, which is 1910-60, primarily deals with the insurance. The language is used to take care of the insurance side of it, to say that your insurance requirements will not be the same if you're driving one of these vehicles as if you're driving one that exceeds the 14,000 pounds. The second section, we're doing is eliminating some languages which came out of the federal statute. This is duplicative language that we have in both the state and the federal regulations and the department, and I yield to the department on explanations on that. of why this was removed, that we don't need to have it in both state regulation and state statute and federal regulation as far as hazardous materials are concerned. The third section primarily deals with the definitions for the entire section of what is a commercial motor vehicle, and that's essentially what the bill does. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer it. Like I said, we have members from the department, and I believe the Alaska truckers, you know a heck of a lot more about trucks than I do.
Okay. I have a question just right off the bat. The 14,000-pound limit, let's see, that was the weight. That's what we're lifting. We're taking it, I guess, oh, we're taking it from 10,000 to 14,000?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Why was the 10,000-pound limit originally established?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, originally when the bill was written in 1999, 10,000 pounds was the standard one-ton truck.
So trucks have simply gotten heavier as all?
Trucks have simply gotten heavier and larger since 1999.
Okay. Representative Gass?
A couple questions. First of all, full disclosure, I too, hauling hay, I use a one-ton truck. I also have a one-ton snowplow that I use. That being said, what you didn't address is the farm or agricultural exemption in regards to vehicles. Is that written? Will that be written in here as well?
Through the chair, Representative Gutters, farm equipment, first of all, there is some references to farm vehicles in here, are basically exempt under a totally different section, and we're not even including that because it's not something that's considered a commercial vehicle by definition.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think on page 3 looks like line 12 or so.
Yeah.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Another question here on let's see, page 2 of the bill. Looks like line 7. And again on page 3, line 4. Why are you deleting the references to transport of hazardous material?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, again, I yield to the department on that. They're the ones that came back and said that that language is duplicative between the existing federal language, and it was not necessary for us to have the same language in state statute.
So you're simply removing it because it's duplicative?
That is my understanding. That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Does that imply that if somebody is operating a vehicle for commercial purposes, that they do still have to comply with hazardous materials rules in terms of placarding and all that?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, yes, they will, because that is a federal requirement.
Okay. Could somebody read this just in the state statute and somehow get the impression that in state they don't have to, if it happens in state, since the feds don't necessarily regulate intrastate, but they do regulate interstate?
As I understand, the hazardous materials is totally under the control of the federal government. And if someone were to read that and were to be pulled over, I suspect the old adage of ignorance of the law is no excuse would be what would happen in court.
Fair enough. Any other questions? All right, at this time we'll open up public testimony on House Bill 15. And in the room we have Rex Young. And representing DOT, Alaska DOT.
Mr. Chair, I'm Rex Young. I'm the Chief of Commercial Vehicle Enforcement for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm here today to offer any help or answer any questions you may have about the bills and the effects of what it has.
Does the department have any objection to raising the weight limit to 14,000 pounds?
No, sir. I think it's an excellent idea. What it does allow for the general contractor, currently a person under 19 years old cannot drive a commercial vehicle. And if they're classified as a commercial vehicle, this particular vehicle you can drive with a Class B license with no problem, except for that classification as a commercial vehicle. It would keep that contractor's son that's trying to get into the business, or his daughter or whoever, from being able to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page one of the bill, line A, where it says, where it deletes the, and that are not necessary to avoid loss or withholding of federal highway funds, does that cause you any concern?
It does not. It actually will free us up. We've been sued several times in the last two or three years. We have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars defending our ability to write these regulations. It's contradictory to other parts of Part 19, where the department as a whole can write regulation to manage and control the highways. And that's the part that is controlling. And people will see this particular portion of the law and say, wait a minute, that's my out. They made too many regulations here. So they'll try to use that argument in court, and it's literally cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay. Works for me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other questions from committee? Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony.
Thanks, sir.
Online, is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 15? Okay, online we have three individuals. We also have Anne-Mai Goldsmith, who is an attorney for the Department of Law, to available to answer any questions. So, Dan Smith from State of Alaska DOT out of Anchorage. Please proceed with your testimony, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Daniel Smith, Director of Measurement Standards and Commercial Vehicle Enforcement. The Division's force is changing the definition of a commercial vehicle to 14,000 pounds. The change removes the regulatory burden on businesses that have been categorized as carriers operating commercial motor vehicles due to the fact that vehicles have gotten larger, and now incidental use of these vehicles or combination vehicles over 10,000 pounds meets the definition of a commercial vehicle. I urge you to support HB 15. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Mr. Smith? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, you used an interesting term, combination of vehicles. Can you help me with that a little bit? Is that like a tractor trailer? What? I mean, I know we're talking small here. What's a combination of vehicles?
When we're trying to make the determination, through the chair, when we're trying to make the determination on what we are going to enforce, it's the gross vehicle weight rating, or when the vehicle is coupled to another vehicle, it's the combination of both of those vehicles that the officer would use to make a determination whether the vehicle is a commercial or non-commercial vehicle.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Mr. Smith? Okay, thank you for testimony, Mr. Smith. Next up will be Davis Thompson from the Alaska Trucking Association. And if you would, Mr. Thompson, please just get fairly close to the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Davis Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies from Barrow to Ketchikan. Freight movement represents a large chunk of our economy and impacts all of us each and every day. The simple truth is that if you got it, a truck brought it. As vehicles have gotten larger and heavier, many vehicles now fall into the current definition of an intrastate commercial motor vehicle that have historically not been considered commercial vehicles, such as pickup trucks, small step vans, small trailers, etc. One of the Alaska Trucking Association's legislative priorities is to change the definition of an intrastate commercial vehicle to reduce the regulatory burden on small business, and House Bill 15 accomplishes that purpose. For purposes of commercial vehicle regulation and inspection, House Bill 15 raises the weight threshold on intrastate commercial vehicles from 10,000 pounds to 14,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating. This change is aimed at the small contractor, lawn care providers, service providers, carpenters, and small delivery vehicles and pilot cars. Pickup trucks and small step vans are getting larger and heavier and are bumping up over the 10,000-pound GVWR, becoming, by definition, a commercial vehicle for inspection and safety regulation purposes. I think there you have some photo examples that have been provided. Pilot cars are those vehicles that accompany oversized loads to serve as an extension of the warning system for the oversized load, and the pilot car's work is almost always intrastate and would fall under this legislation. Being over 10,000 pounds causes the driver to obtain a biannual medical certification, complete daily vehicle inspection reports, perform or have performed annual inspections, to stop at all open way stations, and be subject to roadside inspections. The employer must maintain a set of driver qualification files and submit annual updates to the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to ensure compliance. And the employer must also ensure that the driver complies with these rules. When over the 10,000-pound GVWR threshold, these vehicles are subject to federal regulations that have been adopted into the Alaska Administrative Code. When passed, this bill will exclude these commercial vehicles that are no more than 14,000 pounds from unnecessary regulation. This change does not change the commercial status of these intrastate vehicles for purposes of registration with the Division of Motor Vehicles, and therefore there is no fiscal impact on the state. These vehicles do not need that level of scrutiny, as typically they are operating in a limited geographical area and are not subject to the wear and tear and other larger commercial vehicle that other larger commercial vehicles experience. On behalf of the Alaska Trucking Association, I urge you to act favorably on this bill, and I'll try to answer any questions. Mr. Chairman, thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Any questions for Mr. Thompson? Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Next up will be Mike Miller from Mosilla, representing CPD Alaska LLC. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me, members of the Transportation Committee. I'm the Director of Trucking for CPD Alaska LLC, the petroleum distribution.
Just move it closer to your mouth.
And please state your name for the record, Mr. Muller.
You're on. Just lift up your finger and talk. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Transportation Committee. I'm the Director of Trucking for CPD Alaska LLC, and my name is Mike Muller. We operate across the state delivering petroleum products to customers both on the road system and throughout western rural Alaska. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 15, sponsored by Representatives Keller and Isaacson and co-sponsored by members of this committee, including Representative Wilson. As you are all aware, this legislation would update the statutory description of a commercial vehicle, taking into account that modern vehicles are built cleaner and with greater safety considerations for their use than was initially the case. Under the amended regulations, we would no longer be required to have personnel who drive the F-50 size trucks certified by the DOT. No doubt you've all seen this type of truck on the highway. It's just a heavy-duty pickup truck. Much like the small businesses who are affected by these regulations, in order to meet DOT requirements, we must transport staff from the far reaches of the state into Anchorage for physicals that are otherwise unnecessary. We also must provide additional equipment and manpower to initiate and maintain records for driver qualification files for staff that do not deliver petroleum products or drive commercial vehicles in their normal course of their day-to-day operations. These transportation and personnel costs weigh heavily into what our costs to run our business in rural parts of the state. And those costs, as in any business, are ultimately passed on to the customer. In areas such as McGrath, where home heating fuel has a base cost of $7.26 a gallon, or in Iliamna, where it costs $7.58 a gallon, our customers would clearly benefit, particularly in the coldest months of the year. In addition to the onerous requirements placed on organizations such as ours, the regulations, as currently written, place an added strain on the Alaska Commercial Motor Vehicle Enforcement resources, which I'm sure we can all agree would be better spent on commercial-grade vehicles and licensing than on large pickup trucks, which could easily be owned and operated by non-commercially licensed individuals with valid driver's license. On behalf of Crowley, our customers, and staff across the state, I greatly appreciate your consideration and continued support of House Bill 15. Thank you for your time.
And thank you, Mr. Mueller. And just for clarification, since most members may not be aware of the name change, what was CPD Alaska formerly known as?
Through the chair, Representative, it was a Crowley Petroleum Distribution.
Okay, just wanted to make that clear for the members. Any questions for Mr. Mueller? Thank you, Mr. Mueller, for your testimony. Anybody else online? Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 15? Well, at this time, I'll close public testimony. Discussion on the bill. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I would like to move HB 15 out of committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal notes, which I believe are zero.
And with individual recommendations?
Individual recommendations. Thank you, sir.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 15 is moved out of committee.
Thank you very much, Chair.
All your bills move with ease.
It's simple. Simple, easy.
All right. Move it is. You got nothing else, right?
Nothing else.
All right. And House Transportation will adjourn. Time is, looks like about 2:03 in the afternoon. And next meeting will be on next Tuesday. All right, it's being adjourned.